Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and with me today is the hostess with the mostest, the insane mercenary herself, the princess of podcasting.
Lady J, when you said that, when you said princess of podcasting, I'm like, ooh, what's like an acronym for that? And I'm like, PP. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work. I don't like it. No, pineapples. I don't like it. So
you don't want to be the princess of podcasting?
No, I like it. I do. That I like. I've tried to break it down in my...
In your head?
In my head. And
it didn't work?
Mm-mm.
Daff J. Shall we get right into this week's discussion? We're going to do our book club that our listeners heard the last time. One of the last times you were on the show when I suggested to you to let's pick a book and do a book club together again. It's been a while since we read.
Yes.
And this was your selection. It was... Why don't you tell us what it is? Since refresh the listener's memory.
So at the time, or even still, who are we kidding? All I do is watch movies.
Yes.
That's all I ever do. And so my brain was turning to mush.
I don't think you Netflix and chill. I think you chill and Netflix. If that's any difference.
So Eric Anthony, my better half, was getting a bit concerned. I was dumbing down a little bit. So he challenged me to an intellectual duel and suggested that I pick a book that would get me back into the reading game.
Right.
Again. And so I chose a book that was centered around one of my... Can passion be used? I don't know.
Interest? It's a passion?
Very, it's a yeah. very difficult thing to say that you have an interest in when it is so heavy and dark. But it is something that I like to educate myself on. I'm intrigued by the savage history of the United States of America. And I wanted to pick up this book that I found in New York City when we went to Strand Bookstore. Mm-hmm. The title of this book is called Incognito, written by Matt Johnson. And the art was done by a Mr. Warren Pleece. It's a graphic mystery, and I suggested we go in with this one.
And as soon as you suggested it, I said, why don't we watch Netflix? Because it's heavy.
It is.
We're going to get into the race relations again. Our show could be called Civil Rights of Solitude. Since this is one of your... Shall I don't want to say hobbies, but it is your interest. It is the thing that you enjoy learning about.
Yes.
And yes. It is valuable to learn because it is a study of character. It's a study of history. It's a study of how the system sometimes works.
Is this how you feel about it?
Yeah, I think this is how I feel about it, but it's also my way of understanding. Like, you always have the hard time of saying... This isn't entertainment. I don't want people to think that I find joy in this.
No.
But I do feel that the reason why people are interested in World War II or are interested in civil rights history or whatever the case may be, it could be something that is, some may think is like...
Well, I'll tell you what it is for me, personally. Yeah. I can't speak on other people.
Yeah.
For me, it's a... admiration and undeniable respect of the efforts of those and the courage they displayed in a time where it was clearly impossible for them to accomplish what they have thus far. And I really do believe that there is a lot that still needs to be done,
mm-hmm.
but what we have thus accomplished, or what has been accomplished, I say we, but what has been accomplished thus far is because of what people have done.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Even the simple fact that there can be interracial marriages or relationships, that was illegal.
Right.
That couldn't have happened if it wasn't for people standing up for what was their right to do. The fact that or we know people in interracial marriages from the States.
Right.
And whether you're an advocate for the movement or not, at the end of the day, you have the ability to live the life that you have and love who you love because of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can call my best friends, they're Black. I can sit next to them when I think too, I could be wrong. The things here in Canada are very different from the States, clearly.
Absolutely.
But still going to the States and having very dear friends from there that don't look like me, but the fact that I can eat with them and sit with them and worship with them or laugh with them or go to a theater with them, I can do this because of people that fought against this type of racism and discrimination.
Right.
And I have nothing but admiration and respect for the courage that they were able to display to move to help move things forward.
Do you find yourself being, you have admiration and respect, do you find yourself inspired by these people?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean I wasn't there for certain speeches and movements and marches, but not being there, it still moves me. It stirs me mm-hmm. beyond belief.
Right.
When I hear and when I see what was done, it's definitely inspiring. And it aspires me to be better and to contribute and maybe not within... There's only so much I can do, A, being Canadian, being all the way up here, and whatnot. But like I said, I think there's certain things that we can do as individuals, just even learning or understanding how this has affected people, just even being considerate and a little bit more patient and compassionate to someone else's experience, I think goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of character study that you can learn from the people throughout history who had to take a stand that was a very difficult stand and suffered and sacrificed, and to see them do it with a level of class and dignity at a time where all the odds were against them. There's a lot to be gleaned from that, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to look at what exactly they had to go through, because a lot of times we gloss over history. We know it was bad. We know that certain things were laws and there was segregation or slavery. We know, Black people were lynched and all those type of things, and it was unfair, it wasn't right. But when you really kind of read the details or hear about first person account, or in this case, in this book that we're going to discuss, the way it's portrayed and things are paced a certain way, and the dialogue that you hear in certain conversations really puts things into perspective of like, oh my goodness, I did not know that it was that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think the United States has become con artists in the sense that, you know, they're not disclosing a part of the history that a lot of people do know of. You know what I mean?
Right.
They pretend it never happened. They think that, anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's fine. I was on a tangent.
Let's get into this book,
okay.
Incognito. Tell us the story about how you found it at Strand Bookstore, because I feel that every book has a little bit more meaning when you kind of talk about where you found it and how you stumbled upon the experience of reading it.
So we were gallivanting around the city, and I know this was one of the hot spots that you wanted to go to, so...
Strand Bookstore.
Yeah, so we made the effort to make it there, and my feet were on fuego. So serious. All I wanted to do was sit down and just take it easy. So you kind of did your thing.
Beautiful bookstore, Strand Bookstore.
Yeah, three floors, including a basement.
Yeah.
So the comic book graphic novel section was on the third floor, along with the erotica stuff. And I know this because that's where the only place I could actually take a seat. There was a section there where I could actually put my feet up and take it easy. Anyway, so... I was looking and looking, and what captivated me was the cover of the book. It's a beautiful... I got the hardcover version.
I think this one's a 10th anniversary edition of when it came out originally, and it has a little bit, sorry to interrupt you, but heightened artwork. Like, it's got a few more... I forgot the way it was put, but it was... kind of in high definition, I guess you can say.
Okay. So it was enhanced a little bit?
Thank you. Thank you. There you go. It's Miller time. Excuse me.
So, I picked up the book, and what it was, if I were to describe it, basically there is this tree, and there's a noose hanging from the branch. And there's this group of people facing this tree, and there's just this one person who's looking back, and he appears to be a reporter. Seeing as his getup, what he's holding in his hand, and I'm wondering, the play on words, incognito, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pick it up, and I took it with me.
So what's the synopsis of the book?
Why
incognito?
The reason, so I will have to say, the foreword of this book was... very captivating to me. You get a little bit of insight on the author himself.
Matt Johnson.
And how this book came into conception.
Okay.
That's the word.
Yeah.
Should I read the foreword?
Sure.
It's a short foreword. It goes like so. I grew up a black boy who looked white. This was... in a predominantly African-American neighborhood during the height of the Black Power era, so I stood out a bit. My mom even got me a dashiki so I could fit in with the other kids, but the contrast between the colorful African garb and my nearly blonde, straight brown hair just made things worse. Along with my cousin, who was half black, half Jewish, I started fantasizing about living in another time, another situation, where my ethnic appearance would be an asset instead of a burden. We would go incognito, we told ourselves, as we ran around pretending to be race spies in the war against white supremacy. He goes on to talk about Walter White.
Not from Breaking Bad.
Not to be confused by from Breaking Bad. Walter White was a founder, I think, of the NAACP, and he himself was... someone who could, in this case, pass as white because he was light-skinned himself, and he actually investigated lynchings, and which when he was in college, he ended up learning about this individual, and it kind of brought him back to his childhood spy games, and he's like, oh, someone actually did this.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of... relit that idea, and then having personal experiences of his own, starting a family, he thought that this would be something that he would revisit and explain in a graphic novel, and I'm really happy that he did, because it's an excellent, gut-wrenching, hard to get through piece of art. I think.
Yeah.
And something that literally has you at the edge of your seat. So I didn't finish the whole foreword. I don't want to spoil a lot of this. I don't think I want to get into every single minutia, because I would hope that people that listen to this episode will actually go out and get this book.
Yeah, me too. I wasn't sure how I was going to react when I read this book. But you finished it, I think, like, in one sitting, which indicated to me that you were enthralled by it.
I was almost drunk by the end of it. I'm kidding.
I was gonna say that I had to have a glass of wine as I read the book.
Yeah, I kid, but it was that it wasn't easy to get through.
No,
have to take pause at some point.
Yeah, I took pause immediately after I read the first, I would say, 6-7 pages of this, because let's get into the synopsis of the book.
Yes, you asked me to do that, and I did something else.
Yeah, no, no problem.
Sorry about that.
So just so people get an idea of what this book is actually about, Zane Pinchback, who is an undercover reporter for a fictional black-owned newspaper, the New Holland Herald, is based out of New York City in the early 1930s. So he's built his career investigating lynchings while undercover as a white person because he's so fair that he could pass as a white person. And he's about to retire, and...
Not retire journalism, retire this
undercover assignment, yeah, because he's been doing it for years, and he's putting his life at risk at doing it. And it's getting to the point where, in the beginning of this book, he almost gets caught investigating by... The point of the investigation was to take the names and addresses of those who were there and to report them in the newspaper that he worked for, but he was taking their names and addresses as though they were going to receive some sort of, I forgot how he did it, but to just, he was posing as a worker for the KKK. So these people didn't realize that their names would be posted in a black newspaper. So he wants to retire, get a new assignment within the newspaper, but fate intervenes when he finds out that his brother is charged with the brutal murder of a white woman in Mississippi. So fearing that his brother will be lynched before being given a chance to clear his name, Zane Pinchback decides to go on the one final investigation to free his brother, and a friend joins him named Carl, who hopes to assume Zane's job after he dies. So this book opens up with the scene of Zane at this lynching. Now, like,
after he dies or after he retires?
This is...
Carl?
No, this is Zane. The book opens up.
No, I understand.
Carl wants to take over Zane after he retires.
I thought I heard. Okay.
So this book opens up with Zane telling you that between 1889 and 1918, which is not very long, maybe 30 years, 2,522 Negroes were murdered by lynch mobs in America. 1889, right?
Yeah, between 1889 and 1918.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2,522 Negroes were murdered by lynch mobs in America. That we know of. That we know of. It's crazy. Since the beginning of the 1930s, most of the white papers don't even consider it news. It's just another person dead. It's not a story. And
can I just interrupt you?
Of course.
This, what Matt Johnson put together here is fiction.
Right.
Based on...
Facts. Right.
And just to kind of give a little bit of background history on Mr. Walter Francis White... I had mentioned before that he noted that lynchings had been so prevalent, and so he actually took it upon himself to infiltrate these white hate groups by investigating lynches and actually reporting on them. As you said, the lynchings increased, and so did race riots, with a total of, I think, 23 in 1919, if I did my research correctly, and it wasn't just confined in the South. So in retaliation, white authorities charged black communities with secret conspiracies to conquer white America. Like, it was a big to-do, even though it wasn't... Like, lynchings, they tried to keep it on the DL, sort of speak. But it was something that... It did kind of fuel a fire at the time with... them trying to wipe out basically black people and all their communities because they saw them as a threat.
Right. And you hear throughout history, you see photos, you see it, what's the word? Done in movies. I'm speechless because I didn't really realize what would really happen at these things, other than the obvious. You knew... It was heinous. But these things became... it's described here as a... basically like a barbecue. Like a little community thing. They'd gather around. They'd watch. They would demasculate the man.
The victim.
the victim.
Mm-hmm. They would dress them up. To humiliate even more so. Basically, the first four pages of this book, it really incites anger in the reader, I would say. At least that's how I felt.
Yeah.
I was in disbelief. Although, like you said, you have seen photos, you've heard reports in history. I will say that it's not graphic in the sense that you're seeing things happen, but the insinuation of the torture and abuse that was done to these people is terrible. And what intrigued me in the initial parts of the page is that Zane Pinchback, the main character of the story, is at the lynchings.
Right.
Posing as a white man.
Right.
So he is seeing this happen.
Right. And having to...
And having to compose himself and restrain himself to do nothing.
Right.
But pretend as though he's a part of this and in support of this whole thing. And I couldn't fathom that. I couldn't understand how someone could do that.
No. And what blew my mind was as they were doing these things, a lot of times they would have a photographer there who were making mementos and keepsakes for the people to take a picture beside the victim hanging, and they'd sometimes use them as postcards to send out. So these people really thought that this was something to celebrate. This was something to, as much as there was a lot of it hidden, in a lot of cases, this was something they wanted to remember because something in their mind, quote unquote, proper had been done. And it just made me so, I can't even describe how mad I was reading that and seeing what they did. And so Zane here in this scene is basically going out to everybody that's watching and having had their picture taken, saying, okay, where would you like it mailed to?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to send you a picture.
He's basically now, he has his reporter hat on, pun intended, and he is collecting names and information and addresses, basically then to be able to expose these people once he gets back up north and to do his job. At this point, though, he does barely get away with his life.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of gets his cover blown a little bit, and just barely makes it out there. So this was like the straw that broke the camel's back for him, in which that's when he goes back to his employer and says, I'm out, I'm done, I want to make a name for myself. And the boss is like, but you are, like, you're doing this thing. And he's like, yeah, but I can't even say it's me doing this because it'll blow my cover.
Yeah.
I actually want an editorial thing. I want a real position where I can get my name going. But before that can happen, as Eric said in the explanation of this book, what gets him back down south was to save his brother, who is also fighting for his life, I guess.
Yeah, he's been accused of allegedly murdering a white woman. So Zane's friend Carl, who wants his job, sneaks onto the train with him. Well, you know what? Before I get there, we got to talk about this very, very essential part of the book, probably the most important two pages in this graphic novel, because it has so much context in regards to identity, in regards to assimilation, and the concept of race. As Zane is preparing to get on a train, head down to Mississippi for this last assignment, he gets to explaining to us, the reader, the fact that he is known as the Incognito, because anything he reports about the lynchings is under that moniker. He doesn't use his real name. He can't put his picture because he'll get caught, right? So he explains the whole concept of being that person. You want to read it for us, Staff? Because I think it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, it was. And I put a sticky on this paper, on this page, because it stuck with me. So it goes on like this. I am incognito. I don't wear a mask like Zorro or a cape like the Shadow, but I don a disguise nonetheless. My camouflage is provided by my genes, the product of the South, the Southern tradition nobody likes to talk about. Slavery, rape, hypocrisy. American Negroes are a mulatto people. I'm just an extreme example, a walking reminder. Since white America refuses to see its past, they can't really see me too well either. Add to that a little of Madame CJ's magic and watch me go invisible. Watch me step outside of history, a simulation as revolution. And War and Peace, with his art here,
mm-hmm.
it kind of took my breath away a little bit.
Yeah. Because he, as he's looking at himself in the mirror, Zane that is, he has these little, the shadows of memories or the symbolisms of what it means to be a light-skinned black person in the United States. And during this time, we got to remember that interracial relationships was against the law. You couldn't, in most states, it was illegal.
Misogynic, I think that's the word.
I think so. I can't say it. You say it better than me.
Well, whatever that was.
So this was the reality of the world they lived in. So for a person to be as light as Zane appears to be, it's a testament to the fact that somewhere down the line, there was something horrible that happened.
Mm-hmm.
From a people who already hated them. One of his ancestors was raped. And that's why Zane has this color. Like, it's a very painful thing to consider, because you look today and you see mixed races and it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the children are often very beautiful. But at the same time, there's also a reminder of something very painful that I'd never really considered. I mean, you hear about it when you watch historical movies and recollections of these things. But I didn't realize that interracial relationships back then was totally against the law.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to pass this way is, yeah, it really was a jarring revelation for me to think about that. And then he goes on to talk about the concept of race. In the next page, he says, that's the one thing that most of us know, that most white folks don't, that race doesn't really exist. Culture, ethnicity, sure. Class too. But race is just a bunch of rules meant to keep us on the bottom. Race is a strategy. The rest is just people acting, playing roles. That's what white folks never get. They don't think they have accents. They don't think that they eat ethnic foods. Their music is classical. They think they're just normal, that they are the universal, and that everyone else is an odd deviation from form. That's what makes them so easy to infiltrate. And you read about these things and you sit back and think about it afterwards. For me, being a white guy, you ask yourself, have I ever fallen victim to that frame of thinking in regards to what I am is just normal. The way I talk is just the normal way to talk. Everyone else is different. And there are concepts that sometimes you don't really realize you might think in just because that's how you've always been raised to think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So as you're reading it, there's some sobering moments where you're like, huh, that's very interesting to see it put in those terms, because this book really highlights the fact that how we see race, like, how do you actually see race? Color of skin, sure, background, where you're from, like he said, but for him to pass as a white guy, but then suddenly something, people realize, oh, you are a black person.
And not in those words. Terms,
yeah. Right? What is it that suddenly changes in the mind of a person to now label them as that? And I think that's, it harkens back for me to think about that Jay-Z song, the story of OJ, where he says, it doesn't matter if you're light, dark, rich, poor, if you worked in the field, if you worked in the house, you're still that thing. And for a person like Matt Johnson, who was able to, in some ways, pass as a white guy, how do you identify yourself? Why does the world see you that way? And suddenly place a value on you, especially in this era. Very, very interesting things to think about. So he heads to the Mississippi, taking the train, and he poses as a member of the KKK, using some of their secret slang. His friend Carl hops on the train, unbeknownst to
Zane,
because he says, "You know what? I wanna take over your role." He's light enough to also pass as a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, "Listen, you might not be made for this, because your reaction to how people talk to you at the wrong time, you're gonna get too emotional," which is demonstrated in a scene on the train with the white man who has a couple of not so respectful words. And but he on their way down, he does pose as a member of the KKK, which is, again, like, oh my goodness, like, imagine you having to know enough about them as a black man, knowing that they could just as quickly kill you, but you know enough about them to pass in secret with their secret language and all of those handshakes or whatever it might be.
I also felt that, again, even though he's a fictional character, it gave me a little insight on him himself, the type of discipline,
mm-hmm,
and patience this person must have had, because I can only imagine then if he's not posing just as a white man who can pass, but also as a leader or one of the KKK members.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure what he was exposed to and things that he had to hear as a black man would have been very difficult.
Yeah, that's...
And devastating. And
that goes back to the point of you feeling admiration and inspiration from these people.
Right. Because I... Anyway, like I said, even though it's not real in this instance, I felt like it gave me a little bit of, I think Matt Johnson did an excellent work on you having some kind of, not just surface, but a little bit more insight on the character himself.
He asks an interesting question at the back of his book, Matt Johnson, in regards to that, what you're talking about. Zane and Carl are both able to pass as white, according to white people. And they hear all of these horrible things said, and they've got to really show their content of character, to take a line from Martin Luther King. And then later on in the book, one of the white characters, spoilers, is confused as black. They suddenly believe he's black. So the questions asked for a group discussion, if it's impossible to distinguish race by sight, why is this so important in American society? What would you think of that? Did you ever consider that question?
Because they're just ignorant. They're just stupid.
Obviously there's...
And it sounds like a cheap response, but mm-hmm, there's no other way to, like, I almost feel like I can't justify someone's stupidity, but
right.
I can't.
And that's when I'm reading this book, I'm thinking to myself, there's got to be a reason beyond just hate and evil, not a good one, but for people to think that this was the right way to be.
There is no justification for
it. No, there isn't. I'm just saying, as far as ideology is concerned, for them to think that they were, that this needed to be done, for this, that it was a law, and for them to, because clearly there's a power structure in place. So we've got to make sure, in order for us to feel powerful, we've got to label the people who are less than, in order for us to stay here. That's the only way I could answer that question.
It's a power trip is what it is.
Right. That's the only way that I can
come
to a conclusion about that question. Yeah. Power structure. To make sure that we... It's like that phrase, or I heard recently... It's okay for you to do well, just as long as you're not doing better than me.
That's petty.
Right. But that's almost
what... And
that's,
you're insecure, and the problem lies with you, not with me.
Right. And that's almost, I feel, what the origins of that country is based on. It's like,
sure.
It's like, we'll take care of you. Some of you might live in the house. We'll even take you to church with us. And maybe you can have your own little shop, or maybe there will be a restaurant that you can eat at. But don't ever think that it's right for you to have the same things we do. It's just completely ludicrous. What's interesting about this thing, again, and you mentioned it before, is that Zane is there to save his brother, who is very dark-skinned, but they look exactly alike. And it kind of, for me, made me realize how different a person can be treated, exactly the same person,
mm-hmm.
same bloodline, same DNA, and one person could infiltrate and be white, and the other person was going to get lynched the next day simply off of the
color of their skin.
Yeah, how much more melanated a person was, and it made me realize in my own life, growing up with my friends, we all liked the same stuff, we listened to the same music. One of my friends worked in a clothing store that he kind of helped me pick up the clothes that I would wear because he was, you know, the fly guy in high school. And looking back, I never thought about it in these terms because I'm like, we all grew up in the same place and we all went to the same school, same neighborhood, yada, yada, yada. But there would be times where we'd be on the phone and he'd have to say, I gotta call you back, because he was going to be stopped by the police just randomly. And that was something that I never even had to worry about.
Because that was your white privilege.
Right. I didn't realize that until a little bit older. And it's just, again, those little... Until you take yourself out of your reality or how you see the world and kind of step into this history and see it and really reflect on your own life at that point, that you don't realize you have those privileges,
mm-hmm.
which is... One guy's in a jail cell being accused, falsely accused, and the other guy's being able to be a reporter,
mm-hmm.
and confuses the KKK, like, just crazy. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about the dynamics of the relationship between Alonzo Pinchback, known as Pinchy, in Mississippi, and the woman Michaela, what was her name? Michaela Mathers?
Michaela Mathers is a white woman who was in a relationship with Alonzo, which, of course, we would know by now that was highly frowned upon. She had set up an illegal moonshine business with Alonzo. But she, I think, was in deep with the sharks, as the Joker would say. and he basically, out of love for her, was trying to do everything possible to kind of get her out of this jam. And things went south with that. And he found himself in this predicament.
Did you feel that it was just a straight-up wrongfully accused murder due to the fact that he was with a white woman and there was the potential of them making money, running off and making a fortune together off the moonshine?
Well, you don't learn about the relationship until later on. Like, he wasn't even being straightforward with Zane when he finally got to speak with him. He was kind of dodging the truth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is funny. I think I'm gonna say something. I feel like because in these stories, the victims are black people, I'm biased to black people. So I automatically felt like everything that was done to them was so unjust that I presumed that Alonzo was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't give these people a fair trial anyway.
No.
And no. Really and truly, innocent until proven guilty, really, right? Between the two, when it came to this relationship that he felt was real, I believed him more than I believed her. I felt like he actually did have true feelings for her.
Right.
Versus the other way around. I thought she was vindictive, advantageous, did what she had to do to further herself.
Right.
And kind of let him rot.
Right.
I already had my reservations about this dynamic before even learning much about it. And maybe that was my own bias coming out.
So you felt like he was duped, unfairly duped by the woman, by the people in the area.
Yes.
And but he had the good intentions.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Got you. There's a portion of this book that needs to be discussed in the sense that we talk a lot about racial discrimination, but there's also viewpoints of women in the book, treatment of women, and also there's a character who has pretended to be a man, a woman who pretends to tries to pass herself off as a man. Does the treatment and viewpoint of women in the terms of being discriminated against affect you as much or more as it does when you see the racial discrimination? As a woman, I'm asking.
I feel like, especially in the climate that we're in, I'm almost supposed to say yes. But if I'm speaking truthfully, personally, I'm going to say no.
That's interesting, because we've talked about this before on other podcasts. We talked about Wonder Woman and all those type of things, asking, how did you feel being empowered as a woman? And you've never been the type to be like, I need this and I want to have that. And you're like, I just want Batman to be represented properly. Yeah. Like, I want people to be treated fairly.
Yeah. And
where does that come from, that feeling of kind of, it's almost as though you're very comfortable and you don't feel like you're oppressed?
I think it comes from how I was raised.
Okay.
I feel like I come from a family with very strong, opinionated women.
Mm-hmm.
Who didn't easily back down from no man or anyone, really.
That got passed on to you.
I think so. I have this. I've been raised with the idea of don't depend on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
If you want it, you go get it, whatever it may be. And I feel too that I was born in a time of privilege. Like I don't have. I didn't live and work in a time where women were oppressed and didn't have... I know there's still a wage war thing that's happening, whether it's in Hollywood or in other places of employment. I'm not oblivious to that. I know it does exist. But I personally haven't felt the effects. Not to say that because I didn't feel it, it doesn't really happen. But I think I was just raised with the idea and mentality to get what's yours and don't let anyone get in your way and be vocal about it. And I think I've...
And you never felt as though there was barriers put up against you systematically, like from the top down to hold women back, to keep them in their place. You didn't feel that you experienced that yourself.
Not as a woman, but perhaps as a woman of color.
Mm. Okay.
More so.
Okay.
So, for example, maybe because when I was a little bit younger, I was a little bit more naive. But perhaps looking back now, and becoming more aware, I'll recall certain conversations or statements or even experiences where something was insinuated because I didn't have the same opportunities as a white person. Because I was...
So naively at the time, you didn't think anything of it. But looking back, now you realize...
I'm like, oh, that had a double meaning.
Oh, okay.
This is what they were concluding
okay.
about me. And at the time, I didn't know any better. I was more like, is that... Are they trying to be funny? Or are they just being... Are they trying to break the ice with me? Like, what is that? Like, I didn't... And also, too, I've been told that I have resting bitch face. So I have a little bit of an intimidating look. And in addition to that, I do have a temper attached to that. And so I almost, in those circumstances, didn't want to feed into that stigma, I guess, of that idea of me. Where I didn't want to give them ammunition to already think what they thought about me. So even at the time, although maybe I wasn't exactly prepared or didn't realize what was going on, I also didn't want to fuel a fire that I wasn't prepared to handle. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I you didn't ever want to give in to people's already... preconceived notion of what they thought you were or should be, so you fought against that.
Yeah, I was on my best behavior, basically. I tried.
Right.
But now being a little bit more mature and aware and more secure with myself, I won't let those things slide. Not to say that I'll start a fight.
You're not ignorant
to it now. But what I'm gonna do now. What I'm going to do now is open dialogue and actually vocalize and say, hey, what do you mean by that?
Right.
I'm like, I'm not going to back down.
So you feel that knowing who you are, knowing where you come from, and being a woman, you can change your own narrative. Whereas when you read these stories of things that happen to other people, it's that... Could it be that feeling of powerlessness of I'm not that I can't change those things that happen or what is continuing happening today, and it just that feeling of powerlessness frustrates you that it affects you more? Is that part of it?
I think because I am a woman, I feel like I have more of a say
right.
in the matter. I can actually defend myself. I can stand up for myself versus the whole racial issue is something out of my reach. It's something that I feel passionate about. But there's almost, I feel like there's nothing I can really do.
Got you. So it's like, it's that feeling of I control my outcome, but
right.
this one here, I have to witness
right.
these things.
I'm a bystander.
Yeah, and I want to do so much,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know where to start.
Right.
Okay. Because, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer to that. It's just interesting to kind of, from your perspective, reading these things and taking in all this information and history and almost living through it vicariously in a way, because you're really reading it. You don't want to miss out on anyone's experience. You want to live through Maya Angelou's narrative. You want to hear and go through Malcolm X's life. Every time you go through those experiences, you're trying to live vicariously through it as though you did go through it. And
mm-hmm.
then that feeling of like, oh, I can't.
Because
your own situation, everyone's own story are pretty remarkable of what they did to survive.
Right.
But you were in control to the point where you're like, I didn't even realize that I went through this. But when you're watching other people that you can't change their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. I just, yeah, it's interesting to see it. And it makes sense.
And
it does make sense.
And I think, too, I mean, I think I even went through that growing up with my parents,
mm-hmm.
right? Where I remember going to the bank or just places of business with my mother, let's say, and I would see certain things. Perhaps if it was a white person at the teller, there was a bit more of a camaraderie, there was a bit more of a warm smile, there was a bit more of service, patience, and accommodation, as opposed to, again, looking back. As a kid, I didn't really realize, but you recall things. And I just remember, perhaps because my mother had an accent, perhaps because her skin was a little bit more darker, the patience wasn't there. If she wanted to inquire about something or be or have more clarification, there wasn't that warmth and accommodation that there was to the person prior.
So now you recollect it and remember that.
And I see that, right?
At the time, did you notice that?
Again, as a kid, I saw it, but I don't think I understood what I was seeing. Getting a little bit older, I think I did see it and understand it a bit better. For example, if my parents or my mother was, I don't know, let's say looking for directions to go somewhere, she was more dismissed.
Mm.
It's okay. Like, why are you even asking me? Like, go that way. It's that way. And, like, not even like, oh, where do you want to go? Like, there wasn't that thing. It was more like, what are you looking for?
Second
it's over
rate.
There.
You got the second rate treatment.
Right. And so as to me, I didn't realize, again, until later on that I thought it was my approach to that was so that they wouldn't be mistreated. I would take it upon myself to be like, Ma, I'll ask.
Mm.
I'll ask for directions. I'll do this. Because, you know, they'll understand me. I sound like what they want to, what they accept.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
They'll be more patient with me because I can approach them in a way that is appealing to them. As opposed to a woman who doesn't appear or sound like them.
Right.
It's not as, they don't like it.
So
I would step in thinking that I'm going to do this to kind of
smooth
it over and make it an easy transaction, not realizing that maybe I was even contributing or diminishing my mother's role as a woman, a provider, the adult.
Right.
The one that is taking care of the family.
Or making people say, no, you're going to respect the woman because she is talking just fine.
Right.
And
right.
You're going to be
exactly.
patient.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, this is the scenario. This is what it is. Take it.
Yeah.
You're going to take it.
Right.
And I didn't realize as a kid that that's perhaps what I was contributing to.
Yeah. It's funny looking back and realizing, oh, that's what... Yeah, well, for me, I didn't experience that in the same capacity. I got the thing from white people who would criticize me for trying to be black.
Hmm.
I mean, that's not the same, anywhere near the same discrimination, but I also got shamed for embracing black culture the way
right.
that I did, because that's what I grew up in.
Right. You were a fan.
I was
a fan
and my friends were, right? I was a fan of hip-hop culture, which it wasn't me... trying to be something I wasn't. It's just what the generation we grew up in, and it bonded... I saw it as something that bonded kids from completely different cultures, and now we shared one.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who were not in the know, they saw me as a wannabe.
Right.
And I got sometimes criticized
and
looked down.
But the people
that
really knew you, though, didn't see you that way.
And that was the interesting thing, I guess, that goes back to the question I had to you before about ability to see race. Because... for all intents and purposes, I'm a white guy, right? There's nothing about me in my genes that is...
Your black friends would say otherwise.
My black friends said otherwise.
I've heard it.
Yeah, right.
It's said frequently.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, but you're not really white, they would say to me, almost as like...
And you would be like, explain this, please?
Yeah.
And they're like, trust us, you're not really white. Like, they say this.
Right. So it's that, again, that thing of what do people see that dictates how we, in a lot of ways, evaluate or rank people and put a value on them,
mm-hmm,
based on what we've decided is one or the other. And it's a scary thought because these things, ethnicity is fine. Culture and where you come from is fine. But to, as long as where we've decided this is white, this is black, why don't you talk more white? Which is a lot, what a lot of people, white ignorant people would say, like, oh, they're not really black, because that's, they sound like this. Like, they, there's no ownership on those things,
mm-hmm,
but society has decided there is, which,
right,
is those things you don't realize is horrible to decide what is proper and place a color on it. And going through this book, like, the villain in this book, Mr. Huey, who eventually captures Carl and concludes that Carl is in fact the incognito,
mm-hmm,
he gives him a little bit of a lowdown, and he's like, listen, we're doing this, we're getting ahead of you guys, because there's going to be a race war, and you guys are trying to take everything that's ours. I don't know if you want to read it, because it gives you some historical context. He references some
civil rights leaders
before the movement,
mm-hmm,
and it's cool to read about these things because it makes you look up, like, who is he referring to?
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a little bit more knowledge, I guess you could say. I don't know if you want to go through what he says to Carl when Carl's captured.
From here?
Sure, sure.
So this is the white supremacist speaking.
Yes.
Says, and on the other side, we got all the mud people, the invaders who want what's ours.
Right.
Carl's response is, I don't want nothing you got, okay? You flatter yourself.
Sorry to interrupt you, Daph, but this word balloon from the supremacist here,
mm-hmm,
Mr. Huey, I think that very much describes the current state of affairs in the world, where you it's that view of invaders.
Yeah,
they're taking away what is ours.
Mm-hmm.
These rights that they want, they're taking away our rights, that we can't do these things. To the point where just recently I was in a Facebook discussion where there was the debate over whether or not or why it should be okay for white people to say the N-word.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you... And it's almost like they've never taken away our rights for anything,
mm-hmm,
in our life. The one thing we're asked not to do by the people who our people of our color tortured and killed and enslaved and segregated, all those things that we said, you can't do this, you can't, they're saying, please don't call us that. Even if you think it's a term of endearment because we use it, just don't do it because it's connected to this. We still feel like, why can't we do it? You're taking away my rights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfectly summed up, I think, in Mr. Huey's little thing there. You can continue. I'm sorry.
Huey continues the conversation by saying, sure you do. You want our money, our education, our homes, our land. You even want our women, too. Don't waste your time denying it. Your leaders, Washington, Du Bois, that's basically what they're saying.
So who were Washington, Booker T. Washington, and Du Bois?
So Booker T. Washington, he was an educator, a reformer, and an influential black leader in his time, which I believe was between the 18-something to 1915-ish. He preached philosophy of self-help, racial solidarity, and accommodation, and he urged blacks to accept discrimination for a time being, believing that education in crafts, industrial and farming skills, and cultivation of the, basically, the more that they would be able to contribute, that the patients would win the respects of whites, and lead to African Americans being fully accepted as citizens.
So he was like, play it safe. Let's work with what we got.
Right.
And, you know, through our good behavior and upstanding citizenship, we'll show them that we belong.
Yes.
Okay.
And W.E.B. Du Bois highly disagreed with that. They were like polar opposites. He was a political thinker, a scholar, and advocated political action and a civil rights agenda. So he was very much...
We gotta take what's ours. We gotta do because, this. Yeah. And it's interesting to reflect on this earlier part of the American history because it reminds me of what John Lewis said, that, you know, you sometimes got to do what everyone else is saying is the wrong thing when you know it's the right mm-hmm, thing. Mm-hmm. And W.E.B. Du Bois was basically saying, look, just because it's the law, and we as people today, we have this tendency to feel like, well, if it's the law, it's the right thing to do. There's a reason why they made it a law. So it helps you to realize just because something's law, or just because something's said or written down somewhere, you got to do it like this. Our internal law, a lot of times, can tell you, like, no, that's just not right, regardless of what's there.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that you reflect back afterwards and be like, wow, it was illegal for people to be served in the same room. And for them to take that stand, as simple as it is, and as normal as we now see it to be, back then,
yeah,
you were a criminal.
Yeah.
It's just...
You were. You were a criminal just for being black, and you were criminal if you were a white, if you were a white person who was in support of...
Ridiculous.
...people that had the right to...
Ridiculous.
...be treated as human beings.
Yeah.
You were also viewed as a criminal. It was...
This book stirs up a lot of feelings.
It really does. It really does.
Okay. let's lighten
it. Let's tone it down.
Let's tone it down just a bit. As a narrative and a story within itself, how did you find it in regards to the mystery aspect of it? Did it deliver in that regard for you?
Yes. I felt it was like a roller coaster ride. It was taking you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I like court movies.
Right.
This didn't have any of that, but the idea of trying to search for truth.
Right.
And find some kind of validation.
Right.
Was what I enjoyed about this book.
Yeah, I feel it does a really good balance of getting you emotionally invested in the issues socially, emotionally invested in the issues. As far as the relationships between the people are concerned, that it's a page turner just as a mystery, like a whodunit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what makes it really, really work, like it would have been a good mystery regardless, but because you're so emotionally attached to things and responding to it with, I guess, a certain vitriol towards the antagonists, it really gets you like constant, like I gotta know.
Yeah.
What's behind this? How did he get into prison?
Yeah.
What's the whole plot behind this guy? How about the artwork? Because we read March, and I asked Nate Powell if doing it in black and white was a creative choice. He does all his work in black and white, but this one is also in black and white. And at the back, it talks about the fact that even though they revisited the artwork and enhanced it, like you brought out, they kept it in black and white and a touch of gray. Why do you think that was? That's the question that we're asked for a group discussion. How did you find the art from War and Peace and the choice to keep things black and white?
I think it's a commentary on the social issue,
mm-hmm,
of it being a black and white situation.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, and this is how I felt with the March series, is that it is pretty brutal and heinous what was done to these people. And for this story to be told in a way that made it, dare I say, palatable, I think that was the only way I could have gotten through it. Like, I know I know certain things happen when you get beaten up and chopped up in pieces and spit on and stuff. I get it. But for it to have been in color, I think it would have made it too real to me.
Would it have made it, you would have made it more real for you?
I think so. And not to say that this eases it. I'm not saying that at all. Because children are also picking this up, right? Like, kids mm-hmm. have access to this. Mm-hmm. And I think it just kind of, it's allowed to, it's tamed a little bit more to be able to reach more people.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe that a lot of the things that I've either watched or looked up, whether it's interviews or certain events, everything was done in black and white. Like, the time that this took place was like in the 1930s.
Right.
And back then, everything was pretty much in black and white, right?
All there memories, like anything to recollect, television, photos, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think it also carries a historic thing to it. Things that are of age or that hold weight from back in the day, they're in black and white to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to today, everything is crisp and clear and colorful, and they promote this brighter and colorful is better.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very stark and savage part of American history
mm-hmm.
that doesn't really allow you to see things in rainbow colors.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you may have, as far as commentary goes, I think you're right about that. Is the issues at hand were this or that?
Mm-hmm.
If you're this, you know, there wasn't a world where with variation. There wasn't this wasn't a time where you could have discussion. And the most discussion you could have was shades of gray, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe, you know. So you're either black or white. Even if you looked white, you were still black.
Mm-hmm.
And you were put in this box if you were one, put in this box if you were another. And this isn't, like, when you see the cover of the book, it's got color.
Yeah.
And it seems like out of place, because you wouldn't see that. You don't want to see that world, almost, in a way where it's like,
it almost looks like it's accepted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, this is what we do for fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We wear KKK hoodies. Ugh. And we bring children to these events, and we barbecue and party all day long. It's almost as if it's present, like it's as if this is. Yeah, I would never.
And what's scary is that a lot of the things, the issues that are dealt with in this book are still not so far off, because as much as segregation is done away with, there aren't any more lynchings, right? Segregation is done away with, but in every little bit that was given, they've made sure, and that's the powers that be,
to keep that in place.
Certain infrastructures.
Jim Crow laws.
Yeah.
It just has a different, it's the same thing, it just has a different name, a different face.
That's it.
But it's the same
and
crap.
And it's done in such a way now that because it's covertly done in many ways, even though it's overt, but
mm-hmm.
it's done in a way where it's like, no. That's not it. This person did this to themselves now. Right? They know the law. And just like back then, you knew the law. But now it's like, well, you know you're not supposed to sell drugs. We can't have people on the streets doing that. But they've systematically placed people in positions where they're still playing the game of Monopoly with one die.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we try to deny that, but you've got to really look at the situation at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing's changed. So, I mean, getting back to Warren Police's art, what stands out for me when you compare it to superhero comic books and illustration, it's so bright and bombastic, and there's action, and Sam Noir refers to it as the kick-splode scenes where something goes off and there's a fight. Whereas in this one, it's a lot of riding the train, riding on a two-horse buggy through the town. And the real, all of the emotion that you're supposed to get from who's the bad guys and who are the innocent ones, in a lot of ways, are all done in facial expressions.
Yes.
And body language.
Mm-hmm.
And movement. And
I thought that was beautifully conveyed.
Right.
Yes, go on, sorry.
No. It really impresses upon you the fact that you're emotionally invested in these pictures. The words are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the scripting is very good from Matt Johnson. But the illustration, the cartooning that is done to show how people accept you 1 minute and you're part of the crew, to how
they can
turn on you. And it's all in the facial expressions, the body language, the weight of the shoulders. Even in scenes that are close up, tight shots, to when you're running through a field and you really get that experience of movement. Like, I saw this, I really felt that this could be a movie as
mm-hmm,
I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it moved that way.
Yeah.
Not just a story. This could definitely be a motion picture. And it's very well rendered, capturing, I think, the era of how people may have looked and dressed and carried themselves.
Right.
And without ever having to read a word balloon, you know exactly who's who and how they feel.
Right.
So, you know, tip my hat off to Warren Police, because I really enjoyed the illustration. How did you feel it compared to reading March and how Nate Powell draws? Not to say that they're anything close, but they're both in black and white. They're both dealing with similar issues, but there's a different, definitely different stylistically. How did you find, what drew you to this or to that? What was it? Anything that you could compare?
I feel like Warren Police was a little bit more structured. There was like, forget our panels, the boxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I found that there was more of that here. It was, I don't want to say the word rigid. It was just more structured.
Okay.
As opposed to Nate Powell, he's kind of like,
there's a fluidity to it.
There is. Like, it's like they go on to, there is no panels. It's just kind of pages go flow on to the next page, like some word bubbles. And
right.
Or I guess because there was a higher populace of people,
mm-hmm.
where they would either be in a group, whether they were at a meeting, whether they were marching, whether they were at a church sermon, there's a group of people. So you can't exactly box them in. And I think that was important for him to display that in March, because you had to see the power in numbers and the support that they gave to each other. As opposed to, this was a very isolated situation or event. So, and it was more intimate in that aspect, because you're following the story of these particular characters, as opposed to in March, it was a movement for a whole. Not that this.
And there's a different passage of time as you read March as well, right?
Right.
Because sometimes you go from a few pages and you're in a different year.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think they're both beautifully illustrated. They touch on this topic. Very honest, but respectfully,
mm-hmm.
and don't withhold any truth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're comparable. They're
no.
very both elevated, in my opinion.
Right.
But they are different from each other, even though they carry the same context, and the approach is the same with not using any color. I just think that this is more of an isolated, intimate storytelling, as opposed to in March, it just encapsulated a grand mass of people. It did center on one person, but he was the voice of many.
Right.
And that had to be captured in there.
Right. And stylistically, like, Warren Pleece's, he's a little bit more cleaner and tighter.
Right.
In his design, whereas Nate has a little bit more of that loose, a little bit looser.
Mm-hmm. Even his word bubbles will be incomplete, and
it's an effect that
it's
he
an
does.
Effect. Yeah. It's kind of like, there is hustle and bustle. There's a buzz going on.
Yeah.
People are talking, and you can't capture it all.
Right.
At the same time, but everyone is literally
there.
On the same page.
Yeah, it gives you that feeling.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're on the same page.
Yeah.
But I thought this was beautifully illustrated, and it really did. It was a hard read. I will say that, but please don't let that deter you from picking it up.
But as hard of a read as it was, how did you feel about the ending?
I can't. The ending. Oh, the ending.
I found
it was. It was like getting a reward at the end.
Very satisfying.
Because, like you said, or like we said, we both agree that it was difficult to get through. But it was almost. There was vindication.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it. I said in the beginning we wouldn't spoil it, but we may have let some things slip. But the ending was, it took a turn for, I'm like, no way. It was.
Yeah, and then you're like, yes way.
Well, no, he didn't.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it was
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was great. Yeah.
It was good.
And you don't usually get that sometimes when you read these.
No, because real life is not like that.
No. But eventually these things will come around. And people who deserve to get what they're going to get will get it. And I think that's the feeling you get when you read this book.
Yeah.
It's like there's a little bit of solace.
Right.
But you went through it to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You went through it to get there.
And I think that was a bit of a, I keep using the word commentary. Is there another?
No, commentary
is
fine.
Is there another word?
No, commentary is fine.
Where, like, the battle doesn't end there.
No.
You know what I mean? But there's so many people in history's past that have literally put their lives on the line to be able to, bring certain things to light to be able to make a change for the future. Now, it's not eradicated.
No, not
racism
at all.
Still
not
exists.
At all. But people, this sounds so stupid, but mixed race relationships now are not against the law.
No.
I mean, it sounds like a stupid thing, but that's how bad it was. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
Well, this was a really good pick. You're on a roll.
Thanks. I'm glad you
I
got
did.
Through it.
No, I got through it. It was a solid book. I recommend it to everybody to read Incognito just from a storytelling perspective from Warren Pleece. Matt Johnson isn't known as, you know, a superstar DC Marvel writer, but what he does write is very strong, powerful stuff, quality. And I had Dark Horse. This is the anniversary edition. Dark Horse published it. Incognito, graphic mystery. Definitely check it out. Hit up your local comic shop. Put in an order for it. It's worth it.
I want to get... Apparently, there's a prequel.
Yeah, Renaissance.
Yes.
I looked it up for you. I couldn't find it on Amazon.
Oh, really?
I'll check it out at the local comic shop for you.
And I think it has Zane in it.
Yeah, it's
well.
About Zane. Yeah.
Doing his investigative reporting.
Yes.
And I want to give that... I want to try to find it.
Give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll try to find it for you. See if there's a collected edition of it.
I think I like this Matt Johnson.
Yeah, he's Well spoken.
I was just going to say that.
Well spoken, yeah. Listening to a podcast of him on Interceptor was the podcast. Or Intercepted. Very good.
I found it.
You did find it.
See, I listen to other podcasts, not just our own. Not just Martin Slam Duncan's. I listen to other podcasts.
So, seeing as you're on a roll, picking book club books, what do you think we should do next?
We're going to do this again? Okay. I think I need to lighten it up a bit.
Okay.
I cried while reading this book.
Yes. You cried while talking about it.
Yeah. Okay, so what are my options?
Anything on the shelves.
Like what? I can't, I don't know. I feel like okay. If I pick Batman, you're going to be like, oh, again. Batman this,
Do you want to try an Image book? Do you want to try a Valiant book? Do you want to go into Marvel, DC territory? Do you want something that is a one and done story? Like, this is a finite story. It's not, you don't got to read this now and read that now. Do you know what I mean?
I don't have to read this now, don't have what?
Like after you read this 6-issue story, that's the story.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm just.
So you want to read something finite.
Oh, is that what we call it?
Yeah, like it has a beginning, middle, and end. And you don't got to, oh, now you got to read this trade paperback to know what happened next.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Because I don't want to have to be reading this, like, waiting for the next issue to come out and stuff. Like, just get her done.
All right, let's go through some characters. Avengers, X-Men, Justice League, The Flash, Spider-Man, Thor.
These are all Marvel people.
Daredevil, Green Lantern, Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Aquaman. Now I'm just saying DC characters. How about Exo Man of War from Valiant, Ninjak, Ivar the Time Walker, Starlight, it's an Image comic book.
I got it.
Okay.
You've had this book sitting there for a minute.
We're gonna read it on the bus?
I keep wondering to myself, how did this get in here? Squirrel Girl?
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl?
It's sitting
right... That is off the beaten path.
It's sitting right in front of my chaise.
Your chaise.
In the cave. And every time, I kid you not, I go in there, I shake my head, and I walk right out. Because I don't know what it's doing in there.
Are you sure you want to read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl?
I want to understand why it's here. So I think I should take a leap of faith and figure this out.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl it is. I'm down.
Yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
Have you read it?
No.
But what the hell is it doing there then?
I've heard nothing
all this
good,
time.
Nothing but good things about it. I saw it at a con for really cheap, a nice hardcover edition of it. And I said, if I'm going to read it, I'm going to get it for a good price because I wasn't convinced, but I've only heard great things about it. So we'll see if this pick lines up with the rest of your good picks. I'm excited. Are you?
No. But I want to understand why.
So you just might beat the crap out of this book.
I don't know. We'll see. If you're saying it's as good as it's...
That's what I've heard. From creators as well. Let's do it.
Like who? Anyone I know?
Yeah, Mike Ruth is a big fan.
Really?
Huge.
He likes...
Loves
the,
it.
The swamp
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, he likes... But he's really big fan of the Squirrel Girl.
Really?
Yeah.
I like the Mike Ruth.
I know you do. All right. Shall we wrap this one up? Thank you, Daph J, for your selection. Thank you for your insights on the book. It's always fun.
Thank you.
us, leave us a review on iTunes, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and send us an email. Thank you again for downloading the information to us. Go pick up Incognito or your paper bag. Oh, he gave me a high five on the air. Oh my goodness, I'm
don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is Gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah. I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah.